Hello all, how are you? You're tuning in to the 80th episode of the Audible Weed Walk podcast. This is Nina welcoming you. This is part two of our joint attempt to address the topic of wild food and fairness. The first episode was episode number 76. I urge you to listen to that as well. You can find it in the Audible radio site and also posted in my YouTube channel, Edible Weed Walk. As I mentioned before, the topic is rather complex and therefore overwhelming to address all at once. But then, remaining in action is the best thing one can do when one is overwhelmed, right? So I had decided that together we will address a tiny bit of the topic whenever it comes to mind and then take a pause to process, question, discuss and return in a week, in a few weeks. That is, so this is week number two, our second attempt to chip into that topic. So, how do we do this? I will tell you my experience, which in some form or the other, I'm sure you all have experienced as well. You know how, if you're in a social media now, that the media matches your interest and keeps you pumping adverts that are likely to be of your interest? I get all kinds of organic food and food growing ads, including ads to purchase cow dung cakes online or well presented wonderful initiatives making specialty food like sandalwood drink, or curious aromatic spices, pickles that I had never even heard of. So I'm sure that you all experienced a similar, kind of alignment of advertisement. All organic, local, with the claims of artisanal sourcing. You must have received, and they must have been, you must have also thought they were wonderful also. They are so much in alignment. The ones which I receive, they are in so much in alignment with my views, values and taste that at some point it becomes unnecessary to focus on the details and I go straight to the product because, of course, they are and they must be sustainably sourced, local, gender sensitive, livelihood generating, enabling and empowering women, involve tribal people, conserving the ecology while increasing income for the local who had very little means. All the right keywords are there. So comfortably I feel that I skip, overlook, and do not even question. With such beautiful artistic presentation and the tales of greenness, I do not know about you, but I almost slip into a trance of all good and can only get better. Instead of speaking in theory, let me give you an example. There are many to pick from, right? Okay, recently I was skimming through a site that was new to me, who make sumptuous looking food like mango leathers or aam papar, tamarind candies, and many other goodies. They are all divine looking and beautiful looking, drinks as well. In flipping through the site, something caught my eyes. It read, and I am quoting the verbatim except giving you the name of the organization and the exact location. It read, "This squash syrup or summer drink is made from actual wild, fresh and organic flowers and not from extracts, essence or dried petals." What does this sentence imply? That if they were made from extract, essence or dried petals, as if that would have something undesirable? I think collecting and drying petals is very okay. Distills are often even traditionally made, and both the distills and extracts. So I guess it meant that artificial essence and extracts are avoided. But how it reads it, it kind of has another connotation. Collecting already dried and not so perfect flower, right? So it has to be picked perfect. Let's move on. The flowers are not coming from any farms, but are harvested from jungles between so-and-so forests in the Himalayan states by local at over 5,000 feet above the sea level. So, implying that if I am to collect them personally, it will be near impossible for me. And what a treat they are, you know, like they are bottling this and making it available for me. Such a premium product. This to me looked to me the cake. Not just that they may be ambiguous about their sourcing from the forest, but they are making it a tagline. Implying what? The flowers collected from the forest are premium. As, somehow those that are, you know, farmed or, you know, growing in the agroforestry are less desirable. So I actually wrote to them and asked, why deplete forest flowers when you can gather from human habitation and farms? What is the rationale for collecting from the real forest? By the way, they call it jungle, a word that I do not attribute to forest. Anyway, mostly people are asking, I noticed that people are asking how much it costs and how to pay and what are the, you know, modes of payment, etc. My question remained unanswered for a very long time. In fact, I did not expect a response, but then it came, and I am quite appreciative of that. The answer was, they grow on trees and fall down on their own. These are collected and used. In any case, the life of the flower is only 7 to 10 days, and nothing will happen to the trees if plucked. So here, you know, you read between the lines, you have to remain open to the idea of the plucking and not just gathering. It's tasty when eaten raw. It used to be regular routine to pick them and eat them while I'm coming back from school when I was studying there. There you go, a beautifully woven personal tale also. By then, there are several likes to this response and more inquiry about the order. My reflection that I posted after appreciating the response was that was days ago, and I have posted my response, but I have not received any reflections in return, and I don't expect. So I had written, for local people to forage and eat is a different and less impactful than commercial operation and the amount of collection needed for that. For catering to non-local people, non-forest existing sources seem like a better option. After all, even fallen dried flowers that are not picked or foraged by local kids and communities contribute to the forest nutrients and soil. That is the flower that we are talking about. What is the flower that you are talking about? Can you guess? Well, my first introduction to the flower was actually through a poem. Tagore's poem in a novella called Sheshir Kobita, or The Last Poetry. The line was, Uddhato jato shakhar shikhare rhododendron guchho. That one line translates to something like, at the tip of each arrogant branch is rhododendron bunch. My own introduction to the real flower was in South India. Yes, it is available in southern Western Ghats. The first time I went to the Palni Hills off Kodaikanal to scout my research area, we could see full bloom of tree, which is Rhododendron arboretum nilagiricum. And this is a subspecies. It is endemic to the area. That is, it is distinct and found nowhere else on Earth. The most common are the Himalayan ones. The flowers are bell-shaped, scarlet, and they are state flowers of Sikkim, national flower of Nepal, and has quite a presence in the entire Himalayan belt. From January to March, typically it blooms. However, the flowers are used more, for food and other purposes in Tibet and in the Indian states of Himachal and Uttarakhand. They are called burans or buransh. It is Rhododendron arboretum. All kinds of things are made from the flowers. Jams, honey, juice. Seemed like a narrow spread, but somewhat like mahua flower, and have a special place in the lives of the local and forest communities. The young leaves of the plants are poisonous, and hence picking and sorting has to be done very carefully. In fact, if not sorted properly, say if a bit of the stamen remains, whatever is prepared, say a honey is prepared, it becomes intoxicating and causes much discomfort. Benefits are plenty. A paste of the flowers cures headache. The juice is rich in calcium, iron, potassium, and vitamin C. It is a fantastic antioxidant and anti-diabetic that also soothes tummy when in trouble. People living in high altitude often suffer from a certain seasonal sickness, especially due to the change of season, when the flowers are in bloom. A chutney made with tamarind, garlic, coriander, and chilies take care of the problem. It seems that is the problem. Flowers are plentiful, yes. Locals collect and eat, and why not earn some living as well? There is nothing wrong with that idea of using some of it commercially. But it becomes so much demanding. If it becomes so much demanding, like the mahua, then people will be selling like the mahua oil or the mahua flowers, where locals don't get to actually use it, but the economic pressure would induce them to sell more rather than use it at all for their nutrition or medicinal values. There are issues of deforestation too, which was underplayed in the response. Anyway, there is less forest now than before. Rhododendron habitat has also reduced, and overexploitation has taken place. This is not just my finding or my thinking. There's a paper published in 2020 by Bijalwan Dobrial and Thakur that mentions that reducing rhododendron tree in natural forest due to human-generated pressure is at such an alarming rate that the supply of flower every year, for which there is no regeneration plan, is astounding. They concluded that the forest communities need capacity building, specifically training for rhododendron conservation. There are multitude of businesses that are trying to gather and process the flowers without following any standards or proper facilities. So there is a lot of waste, and of course not everything is up to the standard, which is in case of rhododendron a bit dangerous also, because the leaves are poisonous, so if that part gets into the product, it's really not quite pleasant. Attentive of the overpopulation, the government is also promoting plantation drives of rhododendron in revenue and Van Panchayat lands as part of their joint forest management or carbon sequestration project. Is there any place for business? Of course there is. The type of initiative that drew me to this issue has immense potential, but they need to maintain standard and not pack in nice bottles. That's not the standard. The standard includes not over-exploitation of forest, but to ensure that collection from forest first can be affordable and usable by the forest communities themselves. Those businesses will be enhanced that can provide clarity and transparency. This is not my word, but words of Dr. Monica Sharma, who says that in her book, Radical Transformation Leadership, that businesses that will thrive in the future will be those that are radically transparent. Now, let's think, if the flowers are all getting sold, albeit not very well and efficiently, that will mean less access to local people. Whenever there is a less access to resources, who loses out first? The girl child and the women. We are, as consumers, whatever, you know, some of us are interested in ecology, some of us are interested in social justice, some of us are interested in gender issues. Whatever, wherever we stand, we as consumers must peel through the fluff of the advertisement and often put our demand of radical transparency. Here is our pause. Any question and thoughts and reflection, please write to me at edibleweedwalk@gmail.com. That is all for today. I'll see you next week. Stay well and stay safe.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.